You are about to walk through the door of common sense and enter the mind of Mandy Cunnell on 84 WHAS.
Howdy do, everybody. It's me, Mandy, and we are going to race through a Thursday edition of the big program. And Dave Jennings in for the vacationing Bryant. You know, Bryant told me he was going to be off. Do you think I asked what he was doing? No.
You don't have to ask.
No?
He's golfing.
Oh, I see.
He has a buddy in town who wanted to golf, so they got an early morning tea time, try to beat the heat.
I was going to say, I didn't realize that you had to get there that earlier for putt-putt.
Well, guys get stuck on the windmill hole, so if you can get up there a little faster,
you'll get through. The windmill gives everybody trouble.
It does, and the gator.
But Dave Jennings is here pushing the buttons, trying to keep me on task. Good luck with that.
I'll do what I can.
Yeah. I make no claims to make that is an easy job. Do we still have Congressman Brett Guthrie coming up at 9:35?
He is supposed to call us at about that time.
Well, he's out of not that he makes a lot of excuses. I actually like Congressman Guthrie. He did vote for the giant poo sandwich, though. So I'm interested to hear from him what his reasoning is. Congressman Jeff Davis voted against it.
Would we be better off, though, without that poo sandwich?
Nah. You know. Nah.
I mean, we wouldn't have to brush our teeth again so quickly.
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. Nobody knows the answer to that question. When you get right down to it, no one knows the answer to that question. In the long run, are we better off? I'm going to say no. I am not impressed. I am not dazzled. I do not feel like I won some kind of victory.
The victory has to be in a new president, correct?
Yeah, that actually is what I'm hoping for. I actually linked to something on my blog. I normally don't link to like the gossipy kind of Washington insider stuff that I read because it's so gossipy Washington insider stuff. But there was a column in a blog that I do read on a regular basis about some of the conversations that have been had around what took place during the debt ceiling deal. Words like moronic. What were some of the other words? And these were coming from Democrats.
Did poo sandwich come out?
No, that did not come out. In Washington, came out a lot here. But some of the words that are being used to describe the president, who, by the way, I would like to wish a happy 50th birthday to our president. It is his birthday today.
He's catching up to Charlie Strong, our football coach.
Yes. Happy birthday to President Barack Obama. As little as I like his policies, I do want to wish him a happy birthday.
Sure.
That's what you do.
Why not?
Why not wish a happy birthday to the people that you disagree with?
Just this time next year, celebrate it somewhere else.
Thank you. No, he could celebrate it in exactly the same place, in Chicago, only he could just take a cab home. Set Air Force One. You know what I'm saying? Although this time next year, he will still be president.
I'm sure Michelle cabs it around town when she's there.
You betcha. Mm-hmm. You betcha. Michelle's out there hailing with those pipes that she's got, you know.
Pipes?
She has pipes.
Oh, she got the guns, huh?
Have you not seen? I mean, how many times do you have to see pictures of her in a sleeveless dress? While all the commentators on The View, ooh and all, look at her arms. They're just so amazing. She does have good arms, but they're guns, man.
Girls notice other girls' arms? I've never heard that.
Are you kidding me? Girls notice girls' everything.
I think girls would notice if they have the flappers going on under
the
arms.
Well, yeah, the continual wave.
And they giggle at them.
No. I notice, I think all women notice other women's arms.
Hmm.
And it's frustrating because some, just like men, same thing, you know, some men can work out very little or work out and get that six-pack ab, and some men can work out every day of their lives and never get there.
I've got two cans of beer.
Yeah, there you go. But women are the same way. And even if I worked out my arms every day, I could never have arms like Michelle Obama because genetically, not in my family tree.
But don't women look at other women to try to find something about them that is less fortunate than themselves?
I don't.
She's got flabby arms. She's got a gut on her.
I'm sure that
goes on. She has no boobs.
It is. Well, maybe. I don't know, Dave. Now you got me thinking about my motivation. Because women are highly critical of other women, but you don't have to be nasty to sort of say. And when I see a woman who is like rocking it, you know what I'm saying? Rocking it. I'm like, she's rocking it.
And then you slap Chuck in the face.
No. No,
he and looking?
No, you can't do that. I'm at the point in my life, Dave, where I realize, case in point, and I hope he doesn't get irritated with me for telling this story on the air.
Good.
We're in a restaurant, and this little adorable hostess, who's probably 21, if she's a day, And so let's just say the girls were out that night, okay? The girls were on display, and she leans over at the table
next to us. So she had a lot of friends with her?
She had, the girls were out to play, okay? They were just, bam, they were there.
Two friends.
Yes, two friends. And twins, as a matter of fact. Mm. And she leans over the table next to us to wipe the table. Now, I look over at my husband, the man I love dearly, who I know loves me as well, and he is staring directly at her cleavage. I mean, there's no, like, pretending not to look. It's just, and I'm staring at him, and as he finally looks back up at me, I give him one of those looks, and he just looks at me and goes, "They were right there!" And I can't argue with that logic. I really can't. And he did say, he goes, I didn't mean to look over at her. It's like my eyes were drawn to them, like a train wreck. You can't not look if they're right there.
It's like the stick that finds the water. It can't help but bending.
The divining rod of boobs. That's fantastic.
Maybe that's
Dave,
a bad analogy.
It is a divining rod of some kind.
It is.
That's really motivating that. But let's not make this the topic of conversation for the entire show. This is what happens when Dave fills in. This is where
I'm just here.
Things just go terribly wrong. See, this is what happens when you bring a guy from the sports station over here to play in the serious pool of political talk radio.
I don't get to do that much anymore, so I like that.
Yeah.
Which is why we're talking about boobs.
Yeah. It's just like what you do every day. Every day. We got a lot of stuff going on today, actual important stuff going on today. I would like to, I won't say thank you. I would like a poke in the arm to the 10 people who sent me the CJ editorial on the debt ceiling deal. There's a reason I don't read the CJ editorial page, because it's infuriating. You know what's the most infuriating for me out of the CJ editorial page? They have this editorial board, and they all take turns writing editorials, but they never sign their name. I mean, what is the difference between them and all of the Nimrods who email me nasty emails and don't sign them? It's cowardly.
It's printed message boards.
It really is. It really is. You know, but this editorial is just so incredibly stupid that it just led me to ask the question, if I were on the editorial board, would I want to be associated with something this dumb? No, I would not. That's the thing about being on a board, letting someone else speak with your name on it. Why don't they sign their individual names? I'm curious about that. Why don't they sign their names?
So you don't have to engage in an actual intellectual argument, a response, a retort.
Well, I've known enough newspaper columnists in my life, and even ones that I agreed with, and I've always accused them of being cowardly. Because they throw out these newspaper columns and then they hide under their desks. A lot of them, you can't even find an email address on their website anymore. They don't even want to hear from you via email. They want to lob the fireball and then they want to run away and hide. At least when I do what I do, I give you this phone number. 571-8484, 1-800-444-8484. And if you have a problem with it, you can call me. I give you my email address. You can email me. Lots of ways to tell me I'm an idiot. But luckily, I have a big radio station to tell the people of the CJ editorial board that they are idiots. Anyway, that's not all we're going to talk about. When we get back, I want to talk about a story that when I saw the first part break a couple days ago, I thought, this could be something, but it could just be political, warfare, for lack of a better way to put it. Well, there's a second cog in the wheel now, and Governor Steve Beshear is going to have some serious explaining to do. I'll tell you why after this on 84 WHAS. It's currently 75 degrees on 84 WHAS. Now, earlier this week, a story broke about a complaint that had been sent to the Attorney General's office and the Republican Party. Actually, it might have been last week. Sorry, the dates are all a blur. Just bells and whistles, everybody. And during a campaign season, whenever I see something like that, my first reaction is, this could be just political dirty tricks. So I can't get too all up in arms about it. I can't make it a giant issue. I can't, because you just don't know how much, I hate to be that cynical, but you don't know if this is just part of a greater strategy to discredit a candidate. Well, I got to tell you, it's starting to look like there may be legs on this story. This today from the Daily Independent, Ronnie Ellis's column. A second formal complaint alleging pressure on state employees to contribute to Governor Steve Beshear's reelection campaign is being lodged. Dennis Gardner, a 12-year state employee and currently an administrative branch manager at the Transportation Cabinet's Office of Highway Safety, told CNHI News he mailed the complaint to Attorney General Jack Conway Wednesday. In the letter, Mr. Gardner alleges that Chuck Gevdon Jr., more on the junior part of that in a moment, at the time the executive director of Highway Safety, twice last year solicited contributions to Beshear's campaign from Gardner's supervisor, who both times refused. Gardner's complaint does not name the supervisor except by title, director of Office of Highway Safety, but the news learned Boyd Sigler was dismissed from that position last month. Gardner alleges the dismissal occurred because of the supervisor's refusal to give money to the campaign. Gardner writes in his letter to Conway, I firmly believe he was terminated because he refused to contribute to Governor Steve Beshear's reelection campaign after being illegally solicited in the office by Chuck Gevdon, executive director of the Kentucky Department of Highway Safety. Gardner continues, because of my close association with these individuals and my knowledge of this type of illegal and politically motivated activity, I am also now being dismissed by the department. He is a married employee and a registered Democrat. He's scheduled to have a pre-termination hearing with cabinet officials on Thursday and is, quote, scared to death, but I've done absolutely nothing wrong. He also alleges another unnamed employee is also being targeted for the same reason. Now, this comes on the heels that Charles Gevdon, the Deputy Secretary of Justice and Public Safety, it's Gevdon? Thank you. I struggled over how to pronounce that and just guessed, obviously wrong. He was accused earlier this week by Dr. Rodney Young, who works in juvenile justice, of soliciting non-merit or politically appointed state employees to give to the governor's campaign. So this is a father and son act going on here. A father and son act. By the way, the campaign is not responding other than to say that they believe that no wrongdoing occurred. Now, with an issue like this, it is very difficult to prove that the governor is ordering people to go out and illegally solicit donations for a campaign. But it does put the governor in the position of either supporting people who are accused of that, which currently he is doing, but that may change. And risk alienating a percentage of your base. By the way, 10% of Governor Steve Beshear's donations have come from state workers. About $400,000. So this could be a very big deal and a problem for the governor's campaign. But I got to thinking about this. You know what I'm afraid of? And I think there's a real possibility this could occur based on what I know about Kentucky voters and the people of Kentucky and Kentucky politics. I am afraid that everyone will just shrug and go, well, it's just how things are done in Kentucky. Well, you know, no big deal. This is how all politics is. This is how it works. This is what happens. You know, everybody expects to be shaken down by politicians. That is what I'm afraid of. That is what I'm afraid of. So I thought I would simply come to work and ask the question, is this a big deal? Is the possibility that the governor or someone in the governor's campaign is illegally shaking down state workers for campaign donations a problem? Now, I got to tell you, my immediate response is, yeah, big problem. Big, 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 big problem. Huge, gigantic problem. But is it enough of a problem that it will cause the governor a problem down the line? And again, this is less about, and I know this is going to sound crazy to people who think I'm just reflexively Republican, but if the same thing were happening with David Williams, I would feel the same way. These are the people that we're electing that are supposed to be the stewards of government for the taxpayers of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, right? They're supposed to be looking out for us. Obviously, the state workers feel like either they feel like Governor Steve Beshear is going to do the most to benefit them. But even if they don't, to have people on your behalf break the law, it's a very big deal. By the way, this is a felony if it actually occurred. But again, we'll see what happens. Greg, you're on 84 WHAS.
Hi, Mandy.
Hi, Greg.
Can you hear me okay? Hey, it's going to be interesting to see the contrast of how this is handled with the newspaper relative to what happened to our previous governor, and for some reason his name escapes me, Ernie Fletcher.
Yeah.
And he had fired some state employees, and it was, I guess, merit employees, and it just blew into a big scandal, and it probably cost him being reelected. And I will bet you this, that this will not be treated in any way by the newspaper in the same way Ernie Fletcher was treated.
What? Are you alleging some kind of media bias, Greg? What are you, crazy? What are you, sitting there with your tinfoil hat on? Come on! We'll take your phone calls after this on 84 WHAS, but first, the Republic Bank and Trust Company Bloomberg Update. WHAS, we all know what happened in Washington this week, and now joining us, the battered and bruised Congressman Brett Guthrie, of course, metaphorically battered and bruised Congressman Brett Guthrie. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. So you voted yes on the...
I did vote yes.
I'm sorry?
I did vote yes.
Yeah.
And I thought, as we went in, you remember how we started this debate? Well, when I started Congress, it wasn't about cutting spending. It was about how much can we spend. I mean, we had the stimulus bill, we had the health care bill, and new entitlement programs that came into being. So the first 2 years I was in Congress, they had 60 votes in the House, a majority in the Senate, and the President, and they were spending us into $1 trillion annual deficits. So now things change. American people said, we want it different. And so when the President started in January, he said, I want a clean debt ceiling, meaning I want to be able to spend money and have no restrictions on it. And we've heard all through Washington, you've heard on the national news, that this is the first time that any group has ever put conditions on the president getting a debt limit. And saying it like, we're doing something to President Obama that's never been done before. But we've never had a $14 trillion deficit before that's as big as our debt, that is as big as our economy. Our economy's $14 trillion. So I think we've truly changed the game. And there are a lot of people who are putting... people in the Tea Party movement, if they had not got involved and not got active and changed the scope of the 2010 election, I think it was very effective. But in the end, I looked at what's the possible, what could we get done? Speaker Boehner began the debt limit discussion saying we want dollar-for-dollar cuts for debt limit increase without raising taxes. And that's the position we started, and that's the position that was the vote. And so we ended up with nearly $1 trillion in immediate cuts. Well, they're over 10 years.
In the first 2 years, I think it cuts $40 billion the first year, $30 billion the second year. It's all backloaded.
But they're in law. But it's not what didn't happen, and what I didn't want to support is we're going to say we're going to cut a little bit now, and then sometime in the future, another Congress is going to have to make the cuts. The cuts are in law now, so they could be overturned, but it would take 60 votes in the Senate to overturn the caps. These caps are hard caps over the next 10 years. When you pass budgets, which we haven't done because the Senate hasn't passed a budget in the last 2 years, you put out 10 years' worth of spending. But we haven't done that because the Senate hasn't passed a budget, but this time these are hard caps in law that can only be overturned by an act of Congress, so it'll take 60 votes in the Senate. So these are real reductions in American spending over the next 10 years. So the first one is just less, it's $917 billion. And then now there's a second group of cuts that is $1.2 trillion. And that's the next big effort that we're going to be dealing with as soon as we finish home working in our districts. We get back in September. And that is what people call the super committee, which is not a blue panel commission or blue ribbon commission, because it's a real committee that will write legislation. And if 7 out of 12 approve the legislation, then it comes to us for an up or down vote. If they don't approve the legislation, then a balanced budget amendment can go to the states to give the $1.2 trillion additional debt authority. If that doesn't happen, which I think that actually would be the best of all scenarios, then they're automatically cut. It's across the board cuts, half coming from all in discretionary spending. So this next effort, what's truly going to get us back on fiscal responsibility as a nation, is to get into the healthcare spending that our nation spends. That's what's driving our debt right now, is the healthcare spending. And reforming programs, preserving them for those who have them, and reforming them for the future is what I hope this committee will be able to do.
Who's going to be on this committee? Because I read something this morning that I found profoundly disturbing after I thought about it, because it said they're going to look for members of Congress that are not going to suffer the repercussions of these difficult decisions in the next election cycle. Now, that means one of two things. It's going to be people that are in districts that are so safe that there's no chance that their people are going to throw them out. And that means that you're going to have people on each side of the political spectrum. You're not going to have, you're going to have hard left and hard right. Now, hard right, I'm down with. But how do you come to any kind of conclusion? How are they choosing who's going to be on this super committee?
Well, the choices are up to the leader. So it'll be Senator McConnell. We'll pick the Republicans from the Senate. Senator Reid, Speaker Boehner, and former Speaker Pelosi will make those choices. And, you know, there's some people in my mind. I think we had Paul Ryan, Dave Camp, and Jeb Hensarling on the debt commission. So those are the obvious names that I would throw out. Dave Camp's the Ways and Means. Jeb Hensarling is our conference chair. I don't know. It's up to Speaker Boehner to produce that. But the point is, if this committee cannot come up with a solution to finding the $1.2 trillion, then we have automatic across-the-board cuts. And those would be pretty painful, because I think Congress wants to make those cuts. And so it puts a lot of pressure. I was concerned about the defense side of it. And as Speaker Boehner said, you know, these will be so difficult for us to handle that this is going to force the committee to come up with something that we all can live with. And so that's the mechanism that's going forward. That's what we could get done. But I do believe the point is, voting for it, we have completely changed the culture in Washington. There's actually an article in the Wall Street Journal today it's not about additional spending. I think even the president talked earlier about the potential of having another stimulus bill. And I wonder why, because the other one has worked so well.
That hardly sounds like a change.
This Friday. That won't happen. And I heard there's another, maybe there'll be a bailout for the states for unemployment insurance. I've seen that in the local paper since I've gotten home. Washington didn't have the money to bail out the states. Does not have the money.
Can I ask you, you said this is a move towards fiscal conservatism. I don't know how you slice it, but adding $7.5 trillion to the national debt in the next 10 years seem like fiscal conservatism to you?
Well,
that's what we're talking about.
The Ryan budget that I really believe, the Ryan budget, the House budget, I should say, that I really believe would change the future of our country and for the better and for our children, did have the $9 trillion worth of debt, because what's driving the debt is healthcare spending. That's driving the debt. And we have other things that we've increased spending on the last several years, but it's really healthcare spending. And if you're going to grandfather people who are on Medicare as they have it, and even people approaching it, then that pushes off the ability to get those deficits under control outside of the 10-year window. And that's the decision we made as a conference, as the Republicans in the House, to say we're going to grandfather people on Medicare, because it would be too traumatic to change it as they now have it, but give a different plan for people 54 and younger. And it does. It does push that out. But the way that we set them up, I believe it would be accepted by Moody's, Standards & Poor's, and all the others, because it shows a pathway to balance. It shows that you're going to get your debt under control. But you're right. To do it today, to balance it today, would be cutting the budget 40%, and you would have to affect current recipients of Medicare, Medicare and Social Security to make it happen quicker. That's a dilemma. You're right. That's a fair point, and that's just the direction we wanted to go with it, was to preserve people that have it, let them have it as they have it.
I have to tell you, Congressman, the part of this bill that really bothers me the most is that it is now codified, the one-time TARP spending, the one-time stimulus package, as part of the baseline going forward. It has now made that part of the baseline. So that one-time spending is now recurring spending, because it's now become part of the baseline budget. And that is, You know, I said it the other day on the air, the American people were lied to about one-time spending, and now that has been made the rule of law going forward.
Well, one-time spending isn't part of the baseline, exactly. I mean, there are parts of it that will go forward, but as the TARP spending decreases, the baseline does decrease with that. Another thing that happens with the baseline that's important is the expiration, the Bush tax cuts, as they call them, are due to expire next year. Because when we extended them last December, it was only extended for 2 years. So the expiration of those are part of the baseline. So if this commission says we want to raise taxes by repealing some of the Bush tax credit cuts or all of them, that doesn't go towards the $1.2 trillion because the budget already assumes that those are in the baseline.
Mm-hmm.
So it really takes a lot of pressure. I mean, it doesn't give a lot of room to people on that committee to say, we just want to repeal the Bush tax cuts because it doesn't won't count towards the $1.2 trillion. Now, I think two things could happen out of this committee, and it really couldn't happen as quick overnight in a small, and it shouldn't happen in a small room in the Capitol building overnight, is to reform entitlements and to reform the tax code. You know, we offered lowering the rate 20% to 25% and closing all the loopholes the president loves to point out, which the corporate jet loophole actually came in the stimulus bill that he supported, the one that you hear so much about. Mm-hmm. But we can close those loopholes and lower the rates for everybody so we have a more competitive country. Because if you look, we typically have, as a nation, have spent 20% of our GDP on government, federal government. Now it's 25%. A fourth of all spending is federal government. And we brought in almost 18%, which shows we have a natural deficit. Now it's 15%. You know, economic growth would take care of could take care of up to half of the deficit problem we're talking about.
I understand that part of it, but you know, when you have a government spending at 25%, which is well above historical averages, what in the world would business owners think? Except they're going to have to raise taxes because they're obviously not going to be serious about cutting spending.
Well, we have to get the spending back to 20%, below 20%, and that's why the cap and balance that I supported. I just didn't think there was an opportunity, and Speaker Boehner said there's just an opportunity to get this through the Senate and through this president at this time. So here was the other alternative. We're going to cut 2.4 trillion dollars worth of spending over the next 10 years and then have this committee to try to reform the system. And that was the choice that we had, or you could vote no against all of it. But I thought this was an opportunity to completely change or begin to change the direction. I don't think it certainly wasn't a touchdown. I'm not going to argue it. But I think we certainly moved the ball onto the side of the field of spending cuts. I mean, this committee, I don't believe, is going to have any ability to raise taxes enough to increase the spending the level that some people on the farther left would like to see it. I think the day of cuts are in Washington until the American people change their mind at a future election.
Well, I read a very interesting column that said that basically talked about the mission that people send people to Washington for. You know, what are they doing? Why are they sending people to Congress? And for decades, if not a century now, the electorate has been sending people to Congress to get money and bring it back to the states. And I am hoping that this is the beginning of a fundamental change in what we expect from our members of Congress. I just think
that's a great point. I ran when the Congressman Lewis decided to retire. The deficit was $400 billion. And my wife and I talked about running for Congress because it does stress your family. The point was, what future are truly going to have at a $400 billion deficit out into the future? So now that's the 0.5 of the $1.5 trillion, bigger than that. But the point, when we were getting past it, working on the bill, the first, the cut cap and balance, the second was called the Boehner Plan, and then the final bill, somebody came to me and goes, you don't know how refreshing this is, how absolutely refreshing this is that the Speaker of the House are calling people into his office to talk to them about a bill, and he's not offering them anything they can take back to their district. He was appealing to them on, this is why I think it's right. This is why I think we should pass it. This is why I think it's the best deal we can get. But he didn't say, what do you need in your district to vote for this bill? That didn't happen. That absolutely didn't happen. And that may be the first time that a bill of this magnitude, of a speaker that's not sure he can get the votes to put forward, has ever done that that anybody could remember. So that has changed. That has absolutely changed. And it's changed because the American people were tired of it when they looked at what happened in the healthcare bill.
We are. Can you hold on to a real quick break?
I sure can.
Hang on.
Sure
you
can.
You enjoy your time in the meadow because I can hear all the birds chirping. It must be delightful where you are. Hang on one second.
We're standing outside, yes.
We're talking to Congressman Brett Guthrie. We'll be right back on 84 WHAS. 84 WHAS. We're talking to Congressman Brett Guthrie. And Congressman, I just was reading on the break the article about the fact that in one day we ate up about 40% of that debt ceiling increase. So we've now, our national debt now exceeds our GDP. So
our national debt does exceed our GDP. And that's why, you know, people were saying it across the country that this is the first, look at the Republicans. They're treating the president different than anybody's ever been treated. There's never been demanding cuts to raise the debt ceiling. But we've never had a debt as larger than our GDP. And that is something that absolutely we're dedicated to continue to move forward to deal with, because we're not going to have the future for our children and our grandchildren if we don't. And so that's why the arguments over the summer. I know it got frustrating for people to watch and to see, but we really felt like it was two principled stands, one on our side saying we can't continue going down the path that we're going, and we're not going to continue to go down the path we're going without changes. And then the president and his side want to go a different direction. And I do believe, although it didn't, I'm not going to say it went as far as I wanted it to go, but I do believe it started a change of fiscal responsibility back in Washington. And as you said, you talked about the additional debt that we're going to have to deal with going forward. And, you know, if we set the principle that every time there's a debt ceiling increase, there's going to be equal cuts, we're going to continue to get that in steps, not in one full swoop, but steps to get this budget back under control, and doing it in a way that preserves Medicare for seniors that have it, but reform it for those that are going to have it in the future. Because if we don't reform it for those who are going to have it in the future, nobody's going to have it because it goes bankrupt in 12 years.
Well, what is next? I want to ask you this. You kept mentioning the fact that the House has passed a budget. The Senate has not acted on it. When does the continuing resolution for spending expire? When can we expect some kind of motion on a budget? Why hasn't that happened yet?
Okay, well, we passed the budget. Senate hasn't. We're passing appropriations bills. The Senate hasn't. I don't think passed any. We passed 7 out of 12, and we'll pass them all before the end of the fiscal year, which is October 1st. So October 1st, so there will be another continuing resolution. So there will be another, because it appears the Senate's not going to pass, unless they really come back after Labor Day, and it takes 30 hours for the Senate to bring up a bill. So there's really no time for them to do if they decide they were going to.
So what if the House just doesn't?
That's another opportunity for us to cut again. It's another opportunity to say, all right, Senate, you're not going to pass the bills. We're going to, because we're lowering the spending in all of our appropriations bills, which sets the marker for the continuing resolution. And so it gives us another opportunity to cut. Every time, you know, it's not one big bill that's going to work out over the next 10 years. We have bill, we have the super committee that's meeting. I guess that's what it's become to be called, so the select committee. We've got the continuing resolution. And so we'll have a budget again next year, a continuing resolution again next year. So over the rest of this term, we have about 4 more times to continue to reduce spending.
So what is the motivation to get a budget passed if Congress has just decided that instead of a budget, it's just going to keep passing continuing resolutions?
Well, you know, the thing about this bill, actually, the budget is a 10-year budget document that lays out the appropriations bills are really what drive the spending. The budget lays the architecture for what the spending can be over that the 2-year cycle, plus out into the next 8 years to be 10. And this bill that we really did sets those caps on discretionary spending. The Senate needs to pass a budget. The reason they don't, because they if either going to show the cuts like we showed that everybody's pillared in the House budget, or some people call the Ryan budget, because you can't show a 10-year plan with and not reforming entitlements, unless you're going to show that you're going to raise massive amounts of taxes. And so either the Senate's going to have to decide we're going to reform entitlements or let the American people know the tax rate that it will take to sustain the welfare state and the entitlements that we put into place. And they don't want to do that. So, I don't know. We're getting to the continuing resolution. It gives another chance to cut, because the Senate won't pass the budget. Say, well, here's a continuing resolution. Here's the levels we're willing to spend. And the Senate's going to, until they decide they're going to do their job, we're going to, I think we have the upper hand in that argument.
Well, we'll see. We shall see. It's just this is just getting exhausting.
It is, but it does every step. If you look at every step we've done, we have begun to cut moving forward. And I think that's what I know that's what the American people want. That's what the people in the second district want. They want to make sure their kids have a better future. And if we get to a point where we're going to tax them to the level to sustain the lifestyle that we want, I've always said this, I'm a baby boomer, 1964 is my birth year. If you follow the projections of without changing in Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid, then my children will wake up and go to work when they're my age just to pay for me to be retired, because that will consume the entire federal budget.
Well,
and
Congressman,
as I said, I got into this for my kids' future. I don't want them to wake up every day just to pay for me, my generation to be retired.
Well,
that's what we're working on.
I appreciate your time this morning, Congressman. It remains to be seen whether I will be enthusiastic about what happens next. But
okay, we'll keep in touch on that, and we'll discuss it, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Congressman Brett Guthrie, have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back after the news, traffic, and weather on 84 WHAS.